And good morning out there in Sandpoint, North Idaho land. This is The Morning Show with Susie Prez and Chris Bessler on this beautiful Wednesday, November 8th. And thanks for tuning in. And we have an interesting show. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
We do have an interesting show. We're going to be talking about the city elections results. The elections were yesterday, and we have with us Ben Olson, publisher of the Sandpoint Reader. Ben.
Hello. Good morning.
You're going to provide that crystal clear analysis, right, of what happened last night.
Wait a minute. That's not what I signed up for.
Election results review.
Yeah. So we're going to swing back around to what happened last night in the election. It was, as always, as all elections are, it was interesting when they're contested as they were. But first, Susie, what is going on with the weather?
You would like to know from the National Weather Service, currently it is fair outside and it's 28 degrees. Today we can expect cloudy with a high near 35 and slight winds 5 to 7 miles per hour from the northeast. Tonight, snow mainly after 4 a.m. and that goes from a 30% to an 80% chance through the night with a low of 30. And it looks like about a half inch of new snow, which is not too bad. And Thursday, snow before 10 a.m. and then rain and snow showers between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. with a high Thursday of 39 and a low Thursday night of 34. And it's kind of like I noticed in the Reader, there was this, or on your website or Facebook page, Ben, that there was this picture and it said no sun for like 30 days or something.
The weather report I saw said something like almost until Thanksgiving, it was rain and snow.
Well, there you go.
Which some people love and some people don't love so much.
The love part comes hard there. But actually, we had some nice sunshine yesterday morning.
Yeah. My suggestion is if the sun shines, everybody leave your offices or wherever you are. And if you're at a school, get the kids out in the sun because it will be intermittent.
Yeah, take advantage of it when it comes. A few other things going on outside. The sunrise was at 6:41 a.m. It got moved an hour ahead thanks to the daylight savings time coming on board on Sunday. It'll set at 4:17 p.m. As we're getting closer to the winter solstice, we're still losing daylight. In the past week, we've lost 21 minutes of daylight per day, so the days are getting short. It's truly feeling like winter, isn't it?
Did you happen to notice daylight savings this year? It usually kicks over at 2 a.m., but my phone kicked over at like 6 p.m. It was the weirdest thing.
Really?
It was 6, and then it was like turning 7, and then it turned 6 again. And maybe that's a new thing the cellular phones are doing.
Verizon got ahead of themselves. Yeah. Maybe they were going on East Coast time.
Yeah, who knows? Like that. It was weird. I thought, I have an extra hour before bedtime.
Yeah.
You will pay in the morning.
Right? I know.
Some other things going on. The last quarter moon will be Friday, so we have some moonlight out there still. And Saturn is a visible evening planet. If you look low to the southwest after dark, you'll see a bright star, and that is Saturn. Actually, in Saturn, if you have a powerful enough telescope, you can sometimes actually see the rings of Saturn, which is pretty cool. Lake Pendere is still being drawn down. It's at 2052.17 feet. It's been drawn down at 1.2 feet in the last week. And actually, at 2052, it's lower than normal. I don't know what they're shooting for this winter, but they will probably hit the low winter pool level here in the next week or so. And things going on around town, Susie, what's the haps?
Well, one of the things is there's a conversation tonight. It's called The Conversation, and it's about the $90,000 Schweitzer Roundabout Art Project. And that is doesn't say where it's going to be held. It's free and open to the public. Oh, it's at Ivano's Ristorante from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
That should be a good discussion, like what is the value of public art? And I think a lot of folks in our art-loving town would say public art is important.
Right. It's being presented by Carol Diener and Ellie Cessnas of the Sandpoint Arts Commission.
Yes. It's open to everybody. Go and hear the talk and put in your own two cents.
Yeah,
it's
join the conversation.
Discussion. Yeah, and that's a pretty cool thing because they are casting it out for outside of the region artists to do, but they're obviously giving preference to local artists that can submit something good. So I feel like all the local artists who think they have a shot, there are requirements because you can't have it too huge in the way of traffic and all that stuff. But that's a pretty central piece of art right there going on the way to Schweitzer.
It's actually kind of a gateway to the city because that's actually near the northern boundary of the city. And if you look at the other roundabout we have at Larch Street, there's some really neat art there. It's a metal fabrication kind of panels by Tammy Farman.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be hung around downtown, but they decided to move it to that roundabout, and it makes a nice atmosphere for that, for sure. Other things going on around town, I wanted to mention that the SARS annual ski swap is this Saturday. That's from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Bonner County Fairgrounds. And if you're hunting for great deals on ski gear, that's the place to go. And in fact, my advice would be if you really want the best deals, get in line around 8:30 because people do line up to get in there for some of that ski gear.
It's kind of a mad moment. Mad dash.
Yeah, but it's very fun, and everybody's all jacked up and excited about the winter coming.
I do want to mention that on Saturday, the Holiday Farmers Market is coming up. And guess what? After partway through this morning, we'll have Emily Levine. She's a local farmer from Red Wheelbarrow Farm. She'll be here talking about the Farmers Holiday Market that's coming up this Saturday at the Forest Bird Charter High School.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about that probably around 8:30 or so.
Yep.
I want to throw out one more mention of a cool thing going on this weekend. The annual Warren Miller film is going to be shown at the Panada on Saturday. It's called Line of Descent, and that's also a high-energy happening that is fun to catch. So if you're into the ski scene or you just want to see some pretty fantastic ski photography, the Warren Miller film is at the Panada on Saturday. And, of course, we have a ton of other things going on around town, as we always do. You can catch those in our calendars at krfy.org or sandpointonline.com.
Also, a reminder that this morning's morning show broadcast is being recorded, so you can go back if you didn't get to hear it or all of it. You can go to our website at krfy.org and go to the podcast area and listen to it.
Yeah, and tell your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're speaking this morning with the famous Ben Olson of the Sandpoint Reader. Kind of famous.
Yeah, being famous in a small town is its own interesting reality. But
local personality.
Yeah, there you go.
So we want to talk this morning and have a little bit of opinion on what happened last night with the city council elections. And, of course, in Sandpoint, we had six seats up for election. Ben, you want to rattle off the results on what happened last night?
Sure. Yeah. I think a lot of people, when they saw the results, weren't too surprised. But coming out with the most votes was Shannon Williamson, who got 735 votes. And Joel Isburo got 649 votes. John Darling was 578. Jeff Boniff was 484. And then Mose Dunkel and Robert Giardini both tied in last place at 123. And that was the turnout. And there was a total of 1,007 votes cast, which, you know, if we take the population of Sandpoint, we don't have any hardcore numbers on that, but it looks like...
Actually, that's ballots cast.
Or ballots cast,
So, sorry. And the total vote number was 2,692, which means, you know, 1,000 people voted. There's some people that did not vote for three candidates. Which it's not unusual. If they didn't have a candidate that they liked, they might have skipped voting for a third or a second candidate. But our new council members will be John Darling and Joel Espero. And, of course, Shannon Williamson, the incumbent, will be back in for each of them for a four-year term.
And Shannon is the council chair.
She's currently the council president, yes.
So one of the things that really came to my mind is how, prior to the election here in the city of Sandpoint, did we get the word out? How did people find out about these candidates? I know that we had various ways of doing that, and we were all, three of us here, were involved in Local Decision 2017 for the city council, and in more than just Sandpoint. But how do we think we did at getting information out about the candidates? Really their job to do that, but we've offered ways for them to get the word out through the media.
Yeah, I think it's important, especially what KRFY and Sandpoint Online and the Reader do in combination. We really try every election, even though this is a pretty small election with just kind of one race affecting Sandpoint. It's important to have full coverage and to show, who people are and what they believe in and what their issues are. And so I really think that we did a great job, bringing the information to the people, but then it comes down to the candidates participating and using the media to get their message out. And that was not so good, in my opinion. There was several candidates who didn't show up to the forum that was held on October 30th. One candidate didn't even turn in the answers to questions to the Sandpoint Online questionnaire. I think that if you're running for office in this day and age, you have to use the platforms that are available to you.
If you're serious, I would say, and you have found the desire to serve the community in this way, So we offered the opportunity, let's put it that way.
Yeah. I think there was lots of opportunity for voters to get familiar with the candidates through these different things. We had the interviews with all six of the candidates here on KRFY. You're right, Ben. One of the candidates didn't even answer the basic questionnaires, and he also didn't answer it for the Daily Bee either. Right. So of course, and actually, when he was in here, he mentioned that it was Mo's, and Mo said that he's run before. He wasn't really going to campaign this time. And of course, he drew the smallest number of votes. Of course, he was wound up in another controversy that I'm sure damaged his candidacy as well.
Probably took the wind out of the sails, as they say. One of the other things I noticed is to be a candidate, you need 5 signatures and $40. I could be miss on that, how many signatures. But so you could just join the race but not be serious about it, kind of... I don't think Mo's even put out any signs. I didn't see any, but
I didn't see any signs. Yeah. No, and it's an old cliche. People say signs win races, and is that true? Absolutely not. But when you see the 3 signs, well, actually, I did see 4 candidates having signs out there, and that was I saw Shannon's signs, I saw Joel's signs, I saw a few Jeff Bonoff signs, and then I saw a few John Darling signs. It's just important. A lot of people don't have any idea who you are. They don't pay attention to the news. They don't pay attention to the analysis. And they show up on election day and they say, who do I know here? And I think, honestly, I think that helped Joel a lot, because Joel, who hasn't eaten at Joel's and who doesn't have a good experience when they go there?
The Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
And so
I think that helped Joel a lot, because he very much is in the public eye already. And people say, I like Joel and, I'll vote for him. And I think that definitely came out in his favor for sure.
And Joel also acquitted himself very well at the forum. He spoke well to issues. There were some issues he wasn't familiar with. He'd say that. They had some OJT on the job training that he was going to incur. But I think one thing that he impressed folks at the forum with was that he's going to be open-minded. And that is really the basic value we want in our representatives, that they'll listen and weigh out all sides. And they may make a decision that doesn't go with where you would go on a particular issue, but you want to know that they are at least taking into account all the sides on a particular issue. And I think the candidates we got are going to do that based on our interviews with them here.
I just want to back up a minute to the forum and Joel talking and speaking. We're talking about working collaboratively and how important that is. And I did get got a strong sense. He's young. He's been called to serve. And he wants to work as a team with the city council. One of the things that really impressed me, I almost teared up, is when he thanked his parents. Mm-hmm. That was very sweet. But that's just off the subject a little bit.
Well, Joel has, his family, they have a very tight unit, and they're amazing people. And, they've built that business from literally from a truck. And they've made it into one of the, most popular restaurants in town. And so, they have a very close family, and I feel like that's what kind of informs a lot of his decisions, is what helps families more. How do we serve the families in Sandpoint? I think that's, if you were to say he had a platform, that's probably it. and he used it to his advantage, and mm-hmm. I think it resonated well with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing about Joel, a point he made several times during the course of the forum, was that it shouldn't, I think we'll see this reflected in his decision making, it should all come down on the government doing stuff for people. People should be involved and engaged themselves, and they should be, as a community, looking how to help one another.
Yep, help your neighbor when they're sidewalk and they're elderly. That question came up.
Yeah.
But he also mentioned, since we're just kind of going over the three, probably the three candidates that won here, he also mentioned how much he loves Sandpoint, coming here as a young child, building up a business. Now he has three daughters, and he wants this town to be the best it can be. That was impressive, too, mm-hmm. that he really feels called to serve mm-hmm. right now. So he will be tried.
He will. The single incumbent we had running was Shannon Williamson. She has served one term, and she's now, as you mentioned, Susie, the council president. And I'll say that in our interviews here on KRFY, as well as her talk at the forum, she really impressed us, very well informed. She knows what's going on with every issue that was thrown at her at the forum. And there was a lot of different questions. That forum was actually an excellent thing.
There were questions from every side of the ball field. And Shannon, you know, she is she's very intelligent. She's very capable, and she's very personable. And, you know, if we had a whole council filled with, you know, Shannon Williamsons, it would be amazing, you know. And she always impresses me with her grasp of the issues and her ability to not, you know, stick her heels in the sand and say, this is what I believe. I feel like, and this is a trait that I attribute a lot to Sean Keogh, our state senator, she reads every issue for what it is, and she informs herself based on all the viewpoints that are available. And I think that's the sign of a good politician. Mm-hmm. And you know, and Shannon, it's no surprise that she came out on top. I think she really represents this town to the fullest.
Yeah, basically, that's the story on Shannon. Well informed, yeah. and willing to listen to all sides,
and very dedicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she had the advantage. She's been looking at budgets, and mm-hmm. a lot of city council work is looking at budgets. And as Joel said, the main things that he's interested in is the sidewalk infrastructure, I call it, the three different things, the sewer, the water, the mm-hmm. the roads and things like that. And that is the city's job for the most part. But then as a team, they can look out to other issues as they come up.
Sure. And I don't think that her, you know, her job as the executive director of the Lake Pontary Waterkeepers, I don't think that hurt at all either, because if there's one thing that we all sort of share, whether we're on the right or the left, is the fact that this lake that we have around our town is pretty special, and it deserves the protection that we want to give it. And so I think that helped her also. You know, the dangerous label of environmentalist didn't hurt her.
You know? No, our lake defines our culture here. Exactly. In so many ways.
You know, you can be an environmentalist without, you know, and still serve all sides of the political spectrum.
Well, she did draw a little heat on social media, I saw, from some very conservative folks that were critical of her because of that association with the waterkeeper. But again, the spectrum is wide, so you would expect that from some folks.
And I think any professional, which Shannon is, knows exactly how to separate your job from your paid job from your service job.
Exactly.
It's not a conflict of interest if you're a professional.
Mm-hmm.
And the third new council member we have is John Darling. We interviewed John here at KRFY. He did not make it to the forum, unfortunately. He had the courtesy of giving us a shout just before the forum to say he wasn't going to be able to make it. John is a longtime resident here. He went to Sandpoint High School. He's now, I think, 43 years old, he has a very good grasp of the issues. I think when we interviewed him, Susie, we were impressed that he was well-spoken to the issues. So he was well-informed to going into the election, and he also impressed us, I think, as a fair-minded individual who's going to be likely to listen to all sides. He identified as important issues that he'd like to work on is, again, the improved streets and infrastructure. He also said high-speed internet is important and affordable water. So he's looking out for those water fees. Mm-hmm. And Ben, did you get a chance to meet John Darling?
No, I mean, I've met him before, I actually don't know a whole lot about him. And I thought his answers to the questionnaire were pretty adequate and covered a lot of ground. And I think he'll probably do a good job. But no, I don't really know him that well. Mm-hmm. And so that was one. It was between John Darling and Jeff Bonna for me. Because I had a good feeling that Shannon and Joel were probably going to make it. But I didn't quite know who was going to take it out between John and Jeff.
And it was close there. John got 578 votes and Jeff Bonhoff got 484.
I think one of the things about John Darling is that he has served two terms in Ponderay as a council member.
Right.
And that does kind of give you a lot of experience those first few years on a council and working as a team and collaboratively. So he knows what he's getting into. And I think that's why he was well spoken. And he did do the research on the subjects. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Kind of knows our community quite well.
Mm-hmm. That definitely didn't hurt. I'm sure, you know, prior experience in a council doesn't hurt anybody. So I think that might have been maybe what kicked him over the top from Jeff.
If you're just tuning in, this is the KRFY morning show, or I should say the morning show on KRFY 88.5 with hosts Chris and Susie. And they were talking this morning with Ben Olson, publisher of The Reader, about the city council election results. The election was just last night. So you mentioned that John Darling, one of our new council members, is, you know, well acquainted with the community. Well, he's actually a Sandpoint High School graduate, which has to bring him a certain number of votes right there. He's going to be connected to the community just by virtue of living here and going to school. So, but I wonder, is that a big factor with voters? It really seems like we have folks running for election that often are not even in town very, very long. One of the candidates, Robert Giardini, had only lived here 2 years. Shannon herself has only lived here 5 or 6 years. So, Ben, what's your take on it? Does it really help to be an old-time family in terms of when you run for these elections, or is it less of a factor?
I think, you know, anything's up to review, but I think it doesn't hurt if you're a Sandpoint local. I think that there's a natural pushback when somebody sees somebody just moved to town and then wants to run for office. I almost think it's only fair to the person running that they need to stick around somewhere for a few years just to see what the local politics are like and what the scene is like and what the issues are, because, you know, if there's one thing that North Idaho, you know, is revolted at is when somebody moves here from out of town and tries to change things right away based on, you know, what they brought from where they moved to or moved from. And I feel like there's always a pushback like that in Sandpoint. So, you know, I don't think it will sink anybody if somebody, you know, somebody like Shannon, she's been in town 5, 6, 7 years, however long, you know, she definitely melded within the community very well. And I feel like it worked, you know, to her advantage in that situation. But, you know, it's a hard road when you have a name that nobody recognizes. Nobody can say, oh, I remember your dad, or, you know, how's your sister? And this is a small community at heart, and a recognizable name will never hurt, I think.
Right. In a town this size, there's that song, and it talks about that. Everybody knows everything about you.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
I just wanted to really, you mentioned the great questions that came out at the forum. So I really want to thank all those 70, 80 people that did come to the forum as an audience to participate, and they had really great questions. So yeah. I just want to send a thank you to that, and also to the 6 people who were candidates and put their name into the ballot, just because, you know, they must have had something.
I really appreciate that people are willing to step mm-hmm. forward. You got to get out of your comfort box often to do that. You're going to get criticized no matter what side of the issue you might be on. So it's the foundation of our democracy here, is that people are going to be engaged that way. I'm going to throw out one more question on Sandpoint. We're going to talk a little bit about Ponderé. But so the three council seats that were up for election, there's six council seats. The three that were up for election were the one held by Shannon Williamson. She was the incumbent. But also Robert Camp, Bob Camp, and Stephen Snedden. They both elected not to to run again. So we have the two new candidates, Joel and John. Ben, do you see that this is going to, with new candidates, new city council guys coming in, is it going to change decision-making by the city council? Do you foresee anything there?
I don't think it will change a whole lot. I think Bob Camp has always been a pretty conservative voice on the council. You know, he definitely thinks through each issue and asks really good questions a lot. And I think that that conservative role, you know, a lot of people say, well, now there's nobody on the council who's conservative. And, you know, Joel, I think, you know, he's a great mix of community boosterism, but he's also got a lot of issues that he does fall on the conservative side. And so I think a lot of people saw that and said, well, that's a good, you know, trade-off for Bob Camp. It's somebody who's intelligent and wants to learn the process and also can help, you know, serve to a little bit of the more, you know, right of center people in Sandpoint.
And that's important, you know, to have a voice out there that's questioning and challenging the thinking of maybe the rest of the council.
Absolutely. Having a council, having any sort of, you know, legislative body that has a mix of political ideologies is very important, I think, always. Just because, you know, if a legislative body skews one direction or the other too heavily, you know, whether it be to the left or to the right, it doesn't matter. It will at one point stop serving the other side. Mm-hmm. And so I never want to see the council of the city council of Sandpoint, you know, skew to the left all the way or skew to the right all the way. I think that there always needs to be a voice that counteracts.
And that is Sandpoint City Council. We want to talk a little bit about what happened in Ponderé. There were city elections, of course, in every city. Most of the cities in Bonner County did not have contested elections. And that tells you right there that people realize that when they get on a city council or they decide to run for mayor, that they're going to use a lot of their personal time. And we got to, again, say thank you to these candidates that step forward to volunteer themselves that way. But in Ponderé, we did have a contested election. Again, there were two seats up for election there, those held by Karen Engel and Kathy Osborne. Karen Engel did not run for re-election. Kathy did. And Kathy won with 50 votes. Also winning was Phil McNierney with 42 votes. And then the other two candidates that did not succeed were Nancy Piet with 21 votes and Jackie Gwinnon, I'm not sure how her name is pronounced. She got 17 votes. So it's a small city. There were a small number of votes, of course. A total ballots cast were 80. And Ben, what would be your take on the Ponderé election?
I think, you know, I've followed Kathy Osborne a little bit just because she's been on the council, but and I've met Phil McNierney before on, you know, in passing, but I didn't know the other candidates. What I think that, you know, Ponderé, the biggest issue obviously is the growth, is the infrastructure, everything surrounding the growth. It's you know, it is a very small city with a small voter base, but you know, there are a lot of growth issues in that city. And so I feel like you know, I feel Kathy probably won you know, based on the fact of her prior service, but also that she, one of her biggest platforms was, you know, growth management and infrastructure, you know, securing their own water system, you know, in the not too distant future. This stuff's important to Ponderé. And so I think that she, you know, she represented that pretty well.
Yeah. And Kathy is well known. Of course, she works at the co-op she writes for the Roundup. And she's another one that will be a fair and a good listener, I think. So I think Ponderé did well in reelecting her. And I don't know if Phil McNierney either. I don't know if you know what any of his issues were that he was running on. Ben, did you?
You know, a lot of the same. He in his questionnaire with our paper, you know, it's basically he said, you know, our challenge as a city government will be in keeping our way of life and values as they are stressed by the accelerated growth in housing, business, and congestion, while maintaining the traffic infrastructure, water and sewer. You know, this is probably the biggest issue in Ponderay. It's a big deal. It's a town where a lot of the things that don't go in Sandpoint end up because we, you know, have either zoned them out or won't allow that type of business. So Ponderay is going to grow over the years, and they do need a strong council to just make sure that it doesn't get out of control because, you know, we all like managed growth.
and Ponderay's got some really interesting opportunities right now. I don't know if you made it out to the Ponderay Neighbor Day that was held about a month ago. But that was put on by the Friends of the Ponderay Bay Trail along with the city of Ponderay. And the city has acquired, I think it's like a 6-acre lot that's behind where the Hoot Owl is. Mm-hmm. And it's going to provide a connecting point to the Ponderay Bay Trail. And so there's really some exciting things that are in Ponderay's future.
If you look at the near future, I mean, they're going to be connected to Sandpoint with that Bay Trail 100% mm-hmm. someday. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really a good thing. You know what, Susie, I want to come back and talk a little bit more about the election. I want to do, if Ben will hang in here, talk a little bit about what we might see coming up in the 2018 elections. Mm-hmm. But
let's take a little musical break.
Yeah.
This is a short song. It was recorded in 1965. It's a George Harrison written song. It was recorded at Abbey Road Studios, and it's called Think for Yourself. From Rubber Soul. We'll be right back with more of the morning show with Chris and Susie and our guest, Ben Olson. And that was the Beatles, Think for Yourself. And we're here in the 88.5 KRFY Studios with the morning show with Chris and Susie on this Wednesday, November 8th.
And we have with us Ben Olson again with the Sandpoint Reader, and we're talking about the election results. We've been talking about the Sandpoint City Council, the Ponderay City Council, we only got a few minutes left here to talk about that because we have another guest coming on. But Ben, there were also some big elections. They're being portrayed at least as kind of key indicators of what might be coming up in 2018 that happened nationally. One of them was the Virginia governorship, and the other one was New Jersey's governorship. And any takeaways on that?
You know, I think it's obviously it's the only bellwether that the Democrats can use going into 2018. Or rather the last bellwether, but it did bode well for the Democrats. I think that it showed a general push away from Trumpism and from the Trump-like candidates. I think that it really made 2018 into the grudge match that's going to be. It's going to be one of the most important election years in recent history, I think. And traditionally, when a president goes to one party or another, you know, the midterm election after that traditionally flips to the other side. And so will that happen this year? Will the Democrats gain some seats and perhaps a majority in the House or the Senate? You know, the Senate's stacked against them. but the House, you know, who knows? It's anybody's game at this point.
Yeah. And because every member of the House is up for election, they only serve 2-year terms.
Exactly.
So all 435 seats are up. Anything could happen there. And, of course, the two Democratic candidates won these governorships that were being so closely watched nationally. And the interesting thing I thought was in Virginia, going into it, they're saying it was a horse race, a toss-up, that it could go either way. This does not give us confidence in our polling. But the Democrat candidate actually won by, like, 9 points there. So it turned out to be a larger margin than was being predicted. In a state that has been kind of on the fence, you know, one of those states that could go either way, Virginia, and that has been seeing some demographic changes, too. It was once reliably Republican, and it's been trending more Democrat. So aside from the national scene, let's touch on the 2018 elections we're going to see locally here. Of course, we're going to have three legislative seats up in District 1, which covers Bonner County. One of the big things that's happening is that Sean Keogh, our senator for state senator for 20 plus years, that I think she's the most tenured member of the Senate, state Senate right now, has decided not to run for re-election. And in that race, there are two announced candidates for the Republican primary, Jim Woodward and Danielle Ahrens. And, of course, between now and when the primary comes, I think in May, there could be additional candidates there.
Sure.
Any take on that?
I think Sean Keogh's definitely throwing her support behind Jim Woodward. She's having a meet and greet. I feel like it might be early December. She's having she's basically hosting a meet and greet for Jim. And so she's obviously pulling for him. But Danielle Ahrens, she has a strong following in this area, particularly among the far right. And she, you know, Danielle Ahrens, a very nice woman. She's very, she presents herself very well. Her take on the issues, it skews way to the right, though, and that appeals to a lot of the voting bloc here in North Idaho.
And she has run twice against Sean and lost both times, but she came closer on the second try. So it'll be interesting with that seat up in the air this time to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think Jim's got a race ahead of him, honestly. I think that she's, just based on the fact she's run before and that she's been in the scene for several years, and he's relatively a newcomer. I think it's his race to lose, basically.
And the other race that we have two announced candidates so far. Well, actually, it's the seat held by Heather Scott. I don't know if Heather's officially said she's running again, but I'm sure Heather will be running for re-election. And there is an announced opponent in the Republican primary there, Mike Beck. And do you have any insights on that race?
I haven't really looked into Mike Beck too much yet. We're going to be doing a little bit of, in January, we're going to do a profile on each of the gubernatorial candidates, and then we're going to follow that with a profile on each of the candidates for the other races leading up to the primaries. So that's when I'm really going to try to dig in and get some more information about who Mike Beck is. And, you know, Heather Scott, same kind of deal. She's very popular among the far right. I think if you were to poll every voter in Sandpoint, whether they like Heather Scott or not, or agree with her issues, I think within the city limits, I think she would fall well short of getting the votes. But that's not who elects Heather Scott. It's the county at large. And, you know, she's from Blanchard. She's from a very different part of the district,
which includes Priest River.
And of course, Boundary County is part of our first district as well. So all the folks up there. And the third race that is got an incumbent in it, it's Sage Dixon in the for the House of Representatives, and no announced candidate there that I know about in the primary. And I don't know any Democrats yet that have announced for any of these if any of these races. Of course, in this county, running as a Democrat is a tough bunch to bear. We'll be covering that here on KRFY. The Sandpoint Reader will be covering it. I'm sure the Daily Bee will be. So I hope, hopefully people
watch
will get
for
informed.
Local Decision 2018. And we want to thank you, Ben, for coming in. I think the bottom line is really get out and vote. Become involved. Get informed. That's what we're trying to do to help you be informed by having these forums, interviews, and writings in the Reader, is to keep the voter informed, but it really means getting out and vote.
Yeah, it's
the most important part. So we want to thank you for coming in. We have another guest coming in.
Okay.
We have a lot to talk about. I think you should be a regular on the show. I'm going to put a song on real quick. This is Katy Perry's Fireworks. It was last year's anthem.
And we're right back with Emily.
Emily Levine from the Farmers Holiday Market. We'll hear all about it, so stay with us. And that was Katy Perry, Firework. I think some of us recognize that song from last year at this time. And this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie on this Wednesday, November 8th. And this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We have our new guest with us. Good morning, Emily Levine.
Good morning, Susie and Chris.
Good morning.
From Red Wheelbarrow Farm.
Yes.
Nice to have you. You're here representing the farmer's market this morning because there's a special event coming up Saturday.
That's correct.
Tell us all about it.
Okay. So this Saturday, November 11th, from 10 to 2, at the Forest Bird Charter High School, we're having our fourth annual farmers market holiday market, which is a indoor, nice and cozy and warm holiday market with all of your favorite, not all, but most of your favorite Sandpoint farmers market vendors. So there will be a lot of fresh produce still and seasonal storage produce. Lots of gifts. A lot of the craft vendors will be there. Lots of baked goods, cheese, all of those usual wonderful things, as well as student vendors from the high school. And it's a last hurrah for the farmers market. Yeah. And we'll all be there.
Is this a new event?
This is the fourth year.
Okay.
It was about 5 years ago, I remember, it was after the farmer's market ended. It was a beautiful long fall, and I went, I still have a ton of produce to sell. So I actually pitched to the board of the farmer's market. The Bonner's Ferry Farmer's Market has been doing a holiday market for years and years, since well before I moved to this area. And they do theirs the following weekend, the weekend before Thanksgiving. So it's kind of a place where you can stock up for holiday, Thanksgiving food. A lot of this stuff will keep even till Christmas if you wanted to be thinking that far ahead as to what kind of goodies you want to prepare for the holiday or just for your everyday use having a lot of locally available foods the early winter.
So what kind of produce is still available?
Well, a lot of farms, people are getting really crafty and great these days with season extension around here. And so there will be fresh greens, carrots, freshly dug carrots, kale, Swiss chard, lettuce, head lettuce, spinach, arugula, greens like that, radicchio. And then there will be onions and garlic and potatoes and winter squash, beets. And then there will likely be what else? I had a list written down that I don't have right now.
You know what? I've gone to it many years, and mm-hmm. or at least the last couple. Oh. It's also a time, it's not just a little bit of food. There's right. a lot of food there. You can go and get 10 pounds of anything
yeah.
that's a storage, and then all those greens that are there. Did you mention chard?
Yes.
And kale.
Chard and kale.
Mm-hmm.
And cauliflower, a lot of times. There's cauliflower and broccoli, the fall brassicas, cabbage. So there's a really wide array of local food. We're not into the deepest, darkest part of the year yet where, it's just potatoes. There's a lot of variety that will be available.
Pretty much all of the farmers, the young farmers, they call there's just this wonderful group of young farmers. And there's older farmers mm-hmm. at the market in the summer. But these young people, folks that have decided to become farmers. I'm thoroughly impressed and very grateful that we can go to the market in the summer and now this Saturday at the Charter High School and visit with these people. They're so enthusiastic, and farming is not that easy, I don't think.
It's not, but yeah, you have to love it to want to do
it.
So then you end up with a whole bunch of passionate people doing what they love. So
I wonder if that makes the food better.
Oh,
it's grown with love and passion and compassion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what kind of growing season did we have this year? What would be your review of the growing season?
It was dry. It was a great growing season. It was a really, really wet spring, a late start for a lot of us because it was wet and cold, and then boom, all of a sudden it was dry, and it was really dry. Mm-hmm. If you have the water to irrigate, I personally prefer hot and dry over cold and wet because you can't really do anything about cold and wet. And then, as you all know, then it suddenly was winter. And that has actually been highly impactful in terms of just putting the garden to bed and fall projects. A lot of us save up our projects for after market ends, and those projects are now more or less
in the snow. You're doing. I'm outside happening. Doing stuff in the snow. That I'm still waiting. We have a lilac bush in our house that for some reason it drops its leaves really late, mm-hmm. and we need to tie it up for the winter. Now it's getting, it's underneath the eaves and snow falls on and it's getting all messed up because I didn't get out there soon enough. Oh, yeah.
There's so many things that
like the ladder that you left out from picking the apples off the tree.
Which there's still apples on the
and
tree.
And the tree.
Right? Yeah. I'm supposed to be erecting a greenhouse right now.
We have this market on Saturday. It's a lot of vegetables. I mean, that's the main focus when you walk in. It's just everywhere. There's also eggs and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's the crafts.
Yep. Yeah, we have a lot gifts, of amazing all kinds of stuff. Fine craft vendors who are really dedicated and come to our market all year long. And beautiful jewelry and scarves and hats and paintings and all pottery and soap. Lots of gift items. Definitely, it's early gift shopping time, and everything that is sold at our farmers market, whether it's food or craft, is always 100% homemade or homegrown. So there's no buying and reselling. So that's true at the farmers market as well, at this holiday market this Saturday as well. There's also student vendors who the high school does a business class. And so the students in that business class have to come up with a product and figure it out and create it over the course of the term. And then this is their chance to try to sell that product. So that's a really fun. Sometimes there's some really neat, beautiful things. I got a screen printed T-shirt for my sister last year. And there will also be hot wood-fired pizza this year. Mandala pizza will be there outside.
And that's really good pizza, by the way.
Yeah, it is really good pizza. So they'll be there also all day, slinging hot pizza.
And that is this Saturday.
This Saturday, November 11th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Forest Bird Charter High School, which, in case you don't know, is kind of just south of Highway 200 off a division. There will be signs there, but if you were going toward Dover on Highway 200 and take a left on Division, then you take a right and the charter high school is back.
It turned
in there
before the big county building,
right,
on Division.
And it's really a festive moment too. Mm-hmm. It's really the last hurrah for the growing season and a wonderful chance to get great vegetables. And I think they're mostly organic.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the farmers are choosing not to get certified these days, just because our markets are so, we do almost 100% direct to consumer marketing, and that a lot of times eliminates the need or desire to go through an outside certification source. But most people are practicing really good practices. You can always talk directly to the farmer about what their growing practices are if they're using any products or chemicals or anything like that. But most people aren't. You should always ask because you can't always assume that. And there are a few certified organic producers.
Mm-hmm. You know, we usually don't get a chance to thank our guests for something special, but KRFY just finished their online auction. And so right now we had two of the farmers that will be there this Saturday. And one is you, Emily Levine, who donated items, gift certificates. You donated two $50 gift certificates to your vegetables, for your vegetables. So I want to really thank you for being an important part of the support that KRFY needs and appreciates. And also Roniger's Farms up in Moye Springs donated a gift certificate for wonderful vegetables. So thank you so much, Emily.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, and we will see you Saturday at the Forest Bird Charter High School. What time does it start?
10 o'clock in the morning.
And it goes till?
Till 2 p.m.
Okay.
Yep. And I know it's the ski swap that day also, so maybe try to make it
a twofer.
A dual. Yeah.
Yeah, you do the ski swap, get your deal. That starts at 9.
Yep.
So you have time to go do that and then swing by the Holiday Farmers Market.
Exactly.
You got to plan these things.
You do.
You know? You got to plan your route.
And now you know you can get pizza when you get really hungry at the ski swap. Mm-hmm. Then you go feed the kids with the pizza while you're doing your shopping. And it's bright, sunny space in there.
So. Talking about preparing for things, I'm wondering just out of the, because we used to come on and we did garden talk a lot. And a question I would have right now is, are you already planning for next year?
Yeah, of course. Actually, I was just getting rid of all my seed catalogs from last year and going like, how come I don't have any seed catalogs yet? Like, usually it hasn't snowed yet and I'm not sitting around.
January-ish.
Yeah, but, well, I usually do my seed order before the new year. I start planning for next year. I mean, all year I'm planning. Every time I have a crop, if it's early or it's late or it does really well or it does poorly, I'm making notes and planning. This year, for me personally, I'm moving my farm completely next year. So
you're moving to a different location.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, really? That's big.
Yeah. I'm not. It's not 100% for this year. I'll be still a little tiny bit at the old farm, but so I have been planning for next year for all year.
Get those farm interns. Anyone out there that wants to learn all about farming?
Yeah.
Emily has interns on her farm, right?
I do, and I would love to have a
whole nice crew of them.
Mm-hmm, extra hands. Yeah. Great. I mean, there's lots to learn. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for coming in and telling us about this Saturday's Farmers Holiday Market at the Forest Bird Charter High School. And a couple things I just wanted to shout out, that we have a morning show tomorrow with Jim and Jack. Their guests will be Madeline Elliott from the Unknown Locals and their involvement. They'll be talking about their involvement in Thoreau, A Ballad of Walden, and that's at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning on 88.5 KRFY. And I'm just looking to see. We are ready to go. We have a Bonnie Raitt song. It is her birthday today. She was born on this day in 1949, and this song is one of her songs that she kind of, you'll recognize, but it's written by Del Shannon. This is Runaway with Bonnie Raitt. We hope you have a beautiful day, and see you next Wednesday.
Yep, bye now.